beginning satsang session on 23rd May 1985 after Madhav's return from Bombay. Continuing Savitri Book 3 Canto 3.
Ashwapati is in a world where one and the many have joined in consciousness. That is, each one feels oneself one with others. There is a kind of universalization of consciousness. A splendid center of infinity's world pushed to its zenith height. Its last expanse felt the divinity of its own self-bliss repeated in its numberless other selves. Each person, each being is here a splendid center of the whirl of infinity, revolution of infinity, pushed to its utmost height. The largest circumference, the last circumference, and each such being feels its own self-bliss, the divinity of its bliss is repeated in everyone else, and that everyone else is only its own self. In other words, each feels his own bliss echoed, shared by everyone else. It took up tirelessly into its scope persons and figures of the impersonal. The impersonal reality throws itself in innumerable persons, countless figures, and each of them takes in its large scope all these persons, all these shapes and figures, as if prolonging in a celestial count. We count here in a human way, 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, as if it is a celestial count, in a rapturous multiplication sum, the recurring decimals of eternity. The recurring decimals in arithmetic, where you use decimals, they go on recurring. We have just put a point. That is, there is an endless procession. And each multiplication, each addition is a point of rapture. Each one not only identifies oneself with all the rest, but looks upon everyone else as a prolongation of one's own existence. none was apart, none lived for himself alone. This is the key. Why? Everyone felt unity, united with everyone else. That is because none lived for himself alone. Unlike in our world, where each one of us lives for oneself. And if we include others in our calculation, it is mostly because their interests are subservient to our interests. Their happiness matters to us. It is a matter of extended ego. But here, things are different. None lived for himself alone. The poet does not say that everybody lived for others. He does not. He says, each lived for God in him and God in all. Each lives for God in himself and for God in all. This is Sri Aurobindo's corrective to the exaggerations of social service. He says, social service, in the manner in which it is carried on, has no spiritual significance because it is only serving the extended ego. But if in serving others we have the attitude of serving God in others, that becomes a spiritual moment. So he says, serve not humanity, but God in humanity. That is how, first in 1911, when he wrote The Yoga and Its Objects, I believe Sri Aurobindo had written, this yoga is not for ourselves, but for humanity. Now, later, he corrected it. Is not for ourselves, but for the divine. And he explained that it is for the divine in ourselves and for the divine in humanity. So here in this world, each lived for God in him and God in all. Each soulness inexpressibly held the whole. Each single existence holds, encompasses the whole cosmic existence. How can it do that, you might ask? So he says, inexpressibly. You can't explain that. You can't verbally explain it in rational terms, but it is a matter of experience. Each soulness inexpressibly held the whole. Then he comes to another point. There, oneness was not tied to monotone. Monotone is one single tone or color or type. When we speak of one, in our mind, we eliminate everything else except that one. It should be of one type, one color, one shape, one truth, formulated in one way. But there, the reality is not a monotone. It is not single in the sense that it excludes multiplicity. It showed 1,000 aspects of itself. This one reality has 1,000 aspects. It is not limited to one aspect. Its luminous, immutable stability, upbore on a changeless ground, forever safe. That oneness, he explains further. First, there is the stability, unmoving, immutable, but not inert, not something dead, but luminous. Luminous stability. It is the breast of Shiva. Upbore on a changeless ground, forever safe. That ground on which everything moves is changeless and always safe. It can uphold any kind, any number of movements. Compelled to a spontaneous servitude, it does not assume mastery over things. It is content. It is compelled to a spontaneous and natural attitude of service. The ever-changing, incalculable steps. Now, this ground of stability supports so many steps, incalculable. You can never know where what step is leading to where. Ever changing. There is no determined, fixed order in the human sense. The ever changing, incalculable steps. The seeming reckless dance's subtle plan. He takes care to add the seeming reckless dance. The steps that move, the steps that go look as if they are reckless. But that is only an appearance. The seeming reckless dance's subtle plan of immense world forces in their perfect play. Immense world forces are in movement. They are taking steps which look pretty reckless, but they all enact a perfect play. Appearance looked back to its hidden truth. Outer appearance always recalls its hidden truth of oneness. Outwardly, things may appear to be different from each other, but each one is always conscious of the hidden truth of oneness that bases it. And made of difference, oneness is smiling play. And by the fact that each appearance, each outer form, always recalls the hidden truth, all difference, all multiplicity becomes a smiling game of the Eternal One. It made all persons fractions of the unique, singular, something which is like unlike anything else. Now, of that, all persons are fractions. But on that account, they were not cut off and made small divisible units. Yet all were being secret integers. Integers is a whole figure. So even though they were fractions, each one was the whole reality. Each one was secretly the whole in itself. All struggle was turned to a swift, sweet strife of love. All struggle is now viewed in its true perspective, which reveals that each struggle is a sweet strife of love. The strife of love is sweet. It is not hurtful, harmful, painful like other struggles. So it is a play of strife. All struggle was turned to a sweet strife of love in the harmonized circle of a sure embrace. The culmination of this strife of love is in the circle of a sure embrace, harmonized, in which the conflicting claims are reconciled, and there is a sure embrace of fulfillment. Identities reconciling happiness gave a rich security to difference. Now each one meets the others in a common happiness that reconciles my identity with your identity. And this gave a security to an apparent difference, because that difference is not in danger of being wiped out, because there is a reconciling happiness based upon the difference. The difference, as he explains elsewhere, is intended to enhance the joy of life. When two who are one are separated and they are put together and they grow together and find each other, there is a greater joy of identity between themselves than before they set about the game. That's the idea of the world as Leela. God loses himself in this play of the universe in order to have a new enjoyment of bliss. When He as the universe joins, He as the creator. So the splitting up, if you can say so, of the one into two, one into many, is with a purpose, to enhance the delight of life, the delight of self recovery, self discovery. On a meeting line of hazardous extremes, here there is oneness, unity. There, at the other extreme, there is multiplicity. There is the many. There is the innumerable. Here there is the infinite. There is the finite. So here are the two extremes. Hazardous, a one single false step, everything goes. Up to that it is stretched because of the sure ground of consciousness. Now, on a meeting line of hazardous extremes, the game of games was played to its breaking point, where through self-finding, by divine self-loss, there leaps out unity's supreme delight, whose blissful, undivided sweetness feels a commonality of the absolute. That is, at the end of it all, at the conclusion of the game, there is that sweetness, there is that bliss, which affirms that the reality is not only alone, absolute, but also all this commonality. That is, sarvam khalu idam brahma. Not only I am atma brahma, but sarvam khalu idam brahma. Commonality of the absolute, but the absolute spreads himself as the commonality. In this background, he says, there was no sob of suffering anymore, anywhere. There can't be suffering where all is one, where all is one even in the multiplicity of creation, where all there is sweetness of joy, of meeting. How can there be a sob of suffering? Suffering is where there is division. Suffering is where there is ignorance. Now, where there is unity, there is knowledge, self-evident knowledge. No room for pain, no room for suffering. That is why there was no sob of suffering anywhere. Experience ran from point to point of joy. Each experience is a point of joy. The next experience is again another point of joy. So life moves from point of joy to point of joy. Bliss was the pure, undying truth of things. Till now, it was theory. Now for Ashwapati, it is a fact. The undying truth of things, unveiled truth of things. All nature was a conscious front of God. This is another key idea in Sri Aurobindo's philosophy, that nature, Prakriti, what is called Prakriti in Indian philosophy, is not different, not alien to the Purusha. Nature is not foreign to the soul, to God. It is only an appearance, a conscious front of God. Behind scratch nature, look behind the exterior of nature and you will find God. So, the apparent difference, distinction between nature and God is only a superficial appearance. Nature is really a power of God. It is Devatma Shaktim, the self power of God. Swagunair Nigudham, lost in its workings, lost in its qualitative workings, and you can't recognize her. But she is not separate. That is why he says, all nature was a conscious front of God. Conscious, not something unconscious. Nature is aware that it is only a front of God behind. What Sri Aurobindo says in The Life Divine, that matter is the robe of the spirit, and spirit is the soul of matter. All nature was a conscious front of God. A wisdom worked in all, self-moved, self-sure, in all the workings of nature, in all the movements in the universe, in all the forms and beings, there is a wisdom that works. That is why it is said, Prajna Netroyam Lokaha. This world has wisdom for its eye. A divine wisdom leads everything. It is not left to chance, it is not left to fate, but there is a guidance, there is a wisdom that works through the machinery of fate and free will. So he says, a wisdom worked in all, self-moved. It doesn't need the stimulation from outer circumstances. Self-sure. It doesn't need to prove its rightness to itself as our mind does. A plenitude of illimitable light. In that wisdom, there is abundance of light. There is no shadow of ignorance, an authenticity of intuitive truth. Intuition, as we have noted before, has a certain stamp of authenticity. It does not admit questioning. Our logical conclusion can be questioned. Why not this way? But when there is an intuitive flash, you can't think of questioning it. It is so self-evident. You begin to think, why didn't I know this before? Obviously it is this. So this authenticity of intuitive truth, truth coming in the form of intuition, elsewhere Sri Aurobindo describes intuition as the edge of truth. It is a ray, an edge of truth, and it carries the authenticity of truth, a glory and passion of creative force. It was creative. The force was not destructive. It was full of passion, it was full of intensity, and it carried the glory of God. So in each line there is a whole philosophy. Here, look, if you read it again, all nature was a conscious front of God, a wisdom worked in all, self-moved, self-sure, a plenitude of illimitable light, an authenticity of intuitive truth, a glory and passion of creative force. This wisdom is full of creative genius. It has power. It is a Shakti and a glorious one at that. I think we can stop there.